Hello, welcome once again to Nuka Girl Says Drink Nuka Cola, the podcast, a weekly podcast about the television series Fallout on Amazon Prime. Though that series was dropped all at once so people could binge it, we decided to do a podcast weekly, so talk about one episode per week until we run out of episodes. Tonight we are going to talk about episode 6 out of 8. So that's where we're at. But before we get into that, who are we? Well, I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the USA of A, and with me in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you tonight?
Doing all right. And in the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how are you?
I'm good.
Excellent. And in the state of Missouri?
Good evening. This is Kevin.
Kevin, how are you?
Oh, just fine.
And in the province of Alberta, Canada?
Hey, everybody. This is Goosey. This is Sean. Hope you're doing well. Not too bad. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right. I guess I'll speak for everybody else. We're all doing all right. Anyway, who are we besides this podcast? Well, we're part of the Dark Discussions News Network, which is www.darkdiscussions.com. That's the network that this podcast, Nuka Girl Says Drink Nuka Cola, is a part of. And basically, you can find all your co-hosts on other podcasts on the network as well. You can find this podcast numerous places, obviously on the website, darkdiscussions.com, but you can also find it wherever podcasts are found on two different feeds. The first feed is Nuka Girl Says Drink Nuka Cola Podcasts. Just search for that on places like Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. And then the other place is the Dark Discussions podcast feed, which is the all-encompassing feed of all the podcasts that your co-hosts that you hear tonight are a part of. And we'll mention some of those podcasts when we wrap up this episode. Let's see. We do have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com, where you can email us and leave a message where we will read your email on this podcast. Just make sure to write Fallout or Nuka Cola or Nuka Girl in the subject, and then whatever your subject is, write out your email, and then we will read it here. The reason you put in one of those taglines in the subject is so we can search for it and also know that it's for this specific podcast, because that email is used for all the podcasts on the network. Also, we do have a Facebook group, which is called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook Group, where you can join in the conversation or start your own. And also on www.darkdiscussions.com. Sean, what else can people find?
You can also find the link for Patreon, which is a way that people can support their favorite creators. So click on the link and it'll take you to Patreon. It's a place where you can financially support your creators each month. So we know, understand that this is difficult financial times for a lot of people, but even if you can donate $1 a month, that helps us, because even though the podcasts are released free across whatever podcast providers you're getting it from, there's a bunch of costs behind the scenes and they do add up. So anything you can provide financially is appreciated. For every $5 that you're able to donate each month, you actually then get to pick a movie that will go into a draw every quarter. And if it's picked, then it will be done as a review either on the Dark Discussions main feed or one of the sister podcasts, depending where it falls, Sean Wise and all that good stuff. Again, understanding the times that we're in, if you cannot financially support us, you can still help us as well by sharing our podcast on social media, as well as giving reviews on whatever podcast provider you're downloading from or listening from, because those reviews help us as well. Anything that you do to support us is appreciated. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being around here to give us the opportunity to do all of this.
Indeed. And in advance, thank you. And reviews on Apple Podcasts is great, as we've said before. And, of course, sharing us anywhere on social media, because both doing that and letting people know about us, as well as the reviews, are all free. All right, so what we're going to talk about tonight is episode 6, The Trap, directed by Frederick E. Otoye, and written by Carrie Dornetto. Carrie Donato, Mike would probably appreciate because she wrote for Arrested Development, Community, Portlandia, and South Park. Interesting. And Frederick E. O'Toy has done numerous television series, including The Good Wife, among others. All right, so I guess we can get into our thoughts on this episode. But before we do, one or two other things. Today is May 21st, 2024, that we're recording this, because sometimes our episodes aren't released on a timely fashion, like episode 5, because we had some technical difficulties. So some of our listeners, like Pam, are always curious. So that's when we recorded it, which is May 21st, 2024, and we're hoping to have this released on May 23rd, 2024. What we do here is we spoil everything because we're assuming that everybody who's listening to this podcast has already watched the show and just wants to hear feedback as well. So the first thing we did is we'll give our review of the episode, and then we will talk about everything and anything related to the episode. So let's go around the table and discuss our thoughts on this episode. So let's start with you, Sean.
Another great episode.
Did we lose Sean?
He sounded drunk for a second and then disappeared.
Yeah, we lost Sean. Okay, so since we lost Sean, let's go with you, Barrett.
I like this episode a lot. It's a little bit crazy of an episode. We get a look into a different vault, and it's kind of fun to see how the two characters react. Not unexpectedly necessarily, but, it is a very interesting episode and it's a lot of fun.
All right. Sounds good. For me, yeah, the episode was really good. It was kind of, interesting. It goes back to episodes 2 and 3, where it was a little bit of a midnight movie grindhouse feel, but also some really good development. To be a frat boy, I was very disappointed that Lucy did not take off her jumpsuit, if you know what I mean, in the episode. But all in all, it was a great episode. And
hey, she was willing, Phil.
She was, and we almost got to see it. But it is what it is. So it also has some great lines in it too, like what Lucy says to Maximus. We'll talk about that. And then just Maximus and his whole storyline in this. So yeah, big thumbs up. Let's go with you, Mike.
Yeah, this was good enough to make me want to explode.
Like a pimple?
Like a pimple, yeah, kind of. this was fun. This was a very funny episode. It certainly had its darker undertone as we get to a little further into the show. It was good. It's setting up another new mystery. We talked about twice now in episode 5. Every vault has its mystery, and we're presented now with the mystery of Vault 4, and there's some definitely weird shit going on. I'm curious to get to the bottom of that in episode 7. But, and then, you know, a little bit of movement with the ghoul, and another hint at something dealing with that character. But yeah, I like this a lot.
All right, sounds good. And let's go with you, Mr. Lutz.
Yeah, it was a good episode. They had some definite areas of humor in it, areas of what the heck did I just see? And yeah, and it they didn't waste any time. I'm just impressed on how well the show was made, because there really wasn't a whole lot that you could cut out to save time or anything like that. It all fit in well. It all seemed to blend very well. And it was one of those, like, if they took something out, it would have messed up the rest of it. It would have messed stuff up. So, I mean, they they did a very good job putting it together, in my opinion.
All right, sounds good. Sean, are you back by any chance?
I believe I'm back until I'm gone again.
So go ahead.
What I was going to say initially was that it was another great episode so far, 6 for 6 this season, on just being fantastic episodes, every single one. I think you guys, I don't know what I missed for your response, what you were giving for your ideas, but a nice mix between horror and mystery and some needed comedy done in a smart way, and more background stuff revealed that explains different motivations possibly. And I had not realized that Ramin Djawadi was doing the musical score, but when I found that out, it made sense for some of the actual musical score choices and how they came out. So
explain who that is for people who don't know who that is.
So he's the composer who did Game of Thrones, Westworld. He's done a bunch of movies as well. And he's got a very iconic sound, I would say, when you listen to his scores, and they're highly appreciated. So it was cool to see that there's yet another piece to that bigger puzzle of Fallout, like behind the scenes creation of it. Just the high level of quality.
Indeed, indeed. All right. Anything else that you wanted to say?
No, we'll get into it when we get to our talking points.
All right. So I think did I do you, Kevin?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I thought I did. Okay, so I got a little confused there because when we lost Sean, I lost track of thought.
Guys.
It's not your fault. This is technology.
Getting unstuck in time is a bitch.
All right, so let's talk about this episode. What do you guys want to start with? I was actually very concerned that these vault dwellers were evil, and that's what we're meant to believe, or something's fishy going on.
So fishy, you say?
That's one way to put it.
Yeah.
So what do we want to talk about?
Well, let's first make note that, well, it's funny because they were in quarantine, and then you see the sign above their door, test subjects. So that kind of makes you wonder, okay, what are they going to do to these people? We see the tooth extracted out of Maximus's arm. That's what the two people on the bridge in last episode used as an actual bullet, was someone's teeth. So yeah, it's probably not going to be particularly clean. But we also meet other people from this vault, and everybody is friendly. Maximus,
or weird.
Maximus mentions, like, it's a cult. You see the way the people are smiling, and it's funny because I started listening to an audio drama of the book 1984 by George Orwell, and there were some similarities between the people that were part of Big Brother and the vault. You know, kind of this smiling, like, I'm smiling because I don't know what else to do because I'm supposed to. And that's kind of how it was with this vault. It's just people were just smiling, just walking down the hall smiling. And we meet the head of this vault, the overseer, a Cyclops.
Chris Purnell was awesome. He was
great. He was fantastic. Yeah. Oh, he don't get me wrong. He was great in this. He really was. But the funny part is later on, you see somebody else. He takes his hat off, and you see a nose in his forehead, and you see another woman with glowing blue eyes, and it's just, all right, something odd is going on here, but no one seems to notice or care or.
All these mutations are normal.
Yes. Yeah, as is the culty worship part.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that you know, they say that most of the people there are from the surface. They yeah. came down where Lucy's like, you know, we don't have anybody from the surface, you know, come to our area. I mean, the last time anybody came to this from the surface, a lot of people got shot. And when we get closer to the end, I do have a question, and I don't know if it's going to be answered this season or not, but I do have a question about Muldaver. Because we also go in and we go to history with the ghoul when he was still the actor, and we get some background on him.
Some very interesting background with his backstory.
Oh, yeah. No, he's got probably one of the most, he's definitely got the most interesting backstory out of everybody in this show.
And I will say in this, I mean, I know what happens down the road or whatever, but in this episode, his wife sure gives off very scary vibes.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we can get to that.
Yeah, we can get to that. Well, we can get to that at any point you guys want, because again, we're what we call a non-a spoilery. We talk everything. We talk everything.
Well, since we're here, then I'll just do the quick part about where Coop is having, he's doing the presentation for Hawking the vaults. And then he has that run-in with what Bud Atkins or whatever his name is, who seems to be one of the Cluster B narc types that we were talking about previously. When he's talking about the T-45s, he had the design flaws, and he's kind of like laughing about it. And then Coop is talking about, yeah, but like that cost lives of people I was with. And then like
in Alaska,
no, like. There's no empathy. It's just, I'm for a branding person. Kind of like, or like just shows no respect or empathy, right? He's just concerned about his own, promotion and power rising situation or whatever, right? And that,
oh yeah.
That, if that's the people that are involved in the Vault Tech and the company and stuff, it doesn't bode well.
So I think this episode also, you bring it up, makes it very clear that this is an alternate past. That this is not starting in, I mean, obviously there is no Vault-Tec in our reality, but
yet
they have a different history. So, it was brought up the fact that in a previous episode that, he has a wife who's a woman of color. If you notice his director in the film he was shooting was also a person of color. Here they really stretched boundaries of credibility by having us believe that a Western in the 1950s actually employed a Native American to play a Native American.
It's an alternate world, so I don't see how
exactly. So all of this is part of it, but here, like, the thing that's very definitive is the fact that we fought some war in Alaska with power armor.
Yeah, the Chinese. We're fighting the Chinese.
I think it was just commies.
Commies in general.
In the Fallout universe, it's China specifically was the invaders of Alaska.
In the show, they don't.
I'm just telling you.
No, I believe you. I totally believe you. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, he's talking about commies. So, I mean, China is still a communist nation. So that makes sense. And I think for me, part of the problem, a misconception that I had when I started this show was I guessed that this was our world and just a future of our world where no, it's just an alternative world, alternative reality, and not, not a new world on its own, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yeah. You understand it pretty well in the game, pretty easily. Here, maybe it's a little tougher to see, but they do show, like the city in the background obviously is giant skyscrapers that don't look like anything in the modern world. But again, that I can see why some people would think this is, 2090, 2090 or something, and not 1950 and alternate reality.
Well, it's like we talked about before, being like Jetsons, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Kind of like the imagined version or variation of
that. It's our world, just an alternate timeline.
Yeah.
Things happen differently.
Yep. Yeah, because I mean, I think what threw me was just how everything looked very 1950s, including the music, including the style of cars for the most part, and everything just looked like it was from the 50s. And so that's why I thought, oh, it's just an alternative, that's why I thought, oh, it's just our history and they just made a different timeline after the 50s, but that's not the case.
Right. It's still an alternate timeline, but the alternate timeline started before the 50s.
Right.
And weirdly enough, they don't actually discuss, we never really get anything.
But it is still an alternate timeline.
Right. We never get anything, to my knowledge. Like, I don't remember anyone talking about, say, World War II with Hitler and Stalin and Roosevelt.
Right.
Even though the dog's named Roosevelt.
We know the dog's name is Roosevelt, but which one?
Yeah. Right. It could have been Teddy.
Well, and their technological movement forward stopped after the nuclear war in some ways.
Yes.
And was stunted, so everything's 50-ized.
Yes. This was like a world that Sliders could have gone to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Sliders. What was Sliders?
It was a show in the mid-90s, late 90s, that were people, they slid between dimensions.
Yeah, it was a really
different
cool show.
Alternate realities.
With Jerry O'Connell and John Rhys Davies.
Yes.
Yep.
Gotcha. I'm not familiar with it.
It was fun for the first year or two, and then it went off the rails.
Because John Rhys Davies left.
Well, and the problems with the studio or whatever, the usual fun stuff. But point being is that it was going to alternate realities, alternate timelines, like with like little changes or big changes. And it was just all a crap sheet kind of thing. So.
Right. I mean, I remember one of the episodes where the French took over the world and John Rhys Davies was horrified.
Yeah.
Well, everyone should be.
Well, exactly.
But back to our actual episode we're talking about.
And if there's anybody French or anybody strongly French listening to this, we're only kidding.
My father was 100% French, though Iberian background because of the French Basque.
Speak for yourself, Kevin.
That's right.
Well, I'm trying to not offend listeners.
I'm not trying to not offend listeners.
Well,
Kevin's a nice guy.
I try.
Well,
give me time, I'll frustrate somebody.
Yeah, but I was going to say back to the episode of like where we were going.
Kill the banner.
I was just going to say that as we were continuing, like with the stuff with that interaction with Bud Atkins and Coop trying to have time away with his wife, but she is very much dedicated to her job. And then they go to the sequence where they're at home and he's like having a moment where he's like saying he's wanting to quit showbiz and get a ranch or whatever, like a couple hours away. And she kind of chides him for that because that's not going to matter if you're 2 hours away from all the bombs are dropping. And there's like moments where he's like trying to connect and she's not connecting so much. It seems
he doesn't seem to understand who she is anymore. I mean, she has fundamentally changed since she started the job, I guess. Yeah.
And then when
their relationship's not right.
Yeah. Sorry. No. And then when they have the moment when they're talking and having dinner, and that person named Henry who called on the phone will have something down the road that's interesting to see. But when they're having the dinner and she brings out the thing that they're like very casually and almost flippantly about like there's no dogs allowed in the vaults.
Right.
Because it's an avoidable, avoidable necessity?
Yeah.
And something like that.
They need food. They need food and they just can't. And I can understand that.
Like there's an aspect, but the way she gives it is very like, I mean, it's different because I'm sure that like all of us see our four kids as family kind of stuff, right? So the way she doesn't look at it that way.
Right.
And anyways, like Coop starts to question her because like, where is this coming from? Like who is making the decision? She won't answer.
Yeah. He's all on the freedom bandwagon.
Right.
Yeah, and then she's letting things slip though about like, well, we have to get the good vault. Well, what does that mean? And then we have to be in the management one. And
the good vaults could mean like the difference between, like, if you're on a plane between normal seating and business class and first class.
Oh, it definitely means that.
I'm just saying that it's not that the bad will be a bad situation, but it's just it'll be much better in first class.
Yeah, let's let Phil say what he was going to say.
Yeah, thank you. So about the dog thing, I don't know if it was bad writing or she's a sociopath or both.
That's what I was thinking.
Because the common thing to say would have been, well, I mean, it's obviously we only have so much supplies and humans have to take precedent over, livestock or pets. It's just common sense. And I think that would have been fine. And he would have said, yeah, that makes sense. It's a real shame because we were,
Well, but it's her delivery.
It's her delivery. Plus what makes it more creepy is that it appears she knows something's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Already. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a weird conversation in the sense. It's like for him to even ask about the dog, it's like, that's like me saying tonight at dinner with my wife, what are we going to do, if China drops the bomb on us tomorrow? And she's going to look at me like,
question is, wouldn't you want to save some dogs? Wouldn't you want to at least have a couple of them that are male and female so there can be some breeding or something?
Kind of like a New York idea.
I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. The whole thing was just weird because it was so easy for her to answer to just have him go, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, also, let's face it this way. I mean, dogs are great for morale.
That's not the point. The point is the conversation was just weird because they're talking about the end of the world and are we going to be able to bring our dog? And it's like, did you look outside? It's sunny outside. And
They're not really talking about it speculatively. It's like, it's going to happen next week. Let's be ready.
Exactly. So that's weird. And the second thing is her answer, because it doesn't matter if dogs are important or not. The point is we only have so much space and we have to get as many people in there as possible. And yeah, maybe other vaults have dogs, but the vault we have
no dogs.
Because we just don't have the resources. I mean, it's a hole in the ground. It's not like a continent,
And yeah, but I think is that her problem or is that his, that he can't, that he's not quite understanding that.
He understands it. He has more of a problem with who makes those decisions.
Well, the people making the vaults.
Well, but the thing is, he doesn't know who that is.
Right. Who is making those decisions? He doesn't know who that is. That was he kept harping on that.
Well, she responded to, like we've said, right? Like the way she responds to his different questions doesn't seem like someone. Like she says that the thing, like the right thing about like, I want the people closest to me in the best position, but it's not sounding like someone who was like loving and caring about their family. It's like a detached way of like, this is what I think a good human may say kind of thing. And that's where I was kind of like seeing like aspects of, does she have cluster B or narc tendencies? Because some of the ways she's responding to him with different questions and with different conversations is like a little scary.
Well, I have feeling that whatever her job is, she's working for the company in what is obviously a significant position. This is her problem solving, right? This is her job every day to deal with this. And we know that the bombs are going to drop because they do. And they're probably just taking kind of for granted that it's going to happen. But this is part of their job, right? Is every day to deal with what they consider to be reality, right? They're selling people on these vault tech things, not as a, if this happens, but when this happens, when the Chinese drop these bombs,
right?
When the war comes,
Right.
And she's being, and I'd imagine anyone in that position is kind of being forced to make very hard-headed, very practical decisions. And in terms of the getting into a good vault, we know that a lot of these vaults are not great. And by, I say when we, those of us who have played the games know a lot of these vaults are not great. But there are vaults where they are experiments and horrible things are going to happen to them. And so she's clearly, and this is where you want to argue the cluster B, absolutely. She's clearly aware some of these vaults are going to be not great places to be. And so they don't want to go into one of these vaults where they're going to turn into guinea pigs. They are going to want to be in a vault like, from what I can tell, Vault 30, 132, 33, where if there is any experimentation going on, it's fairly minor. You're not turning people into Cyclopses.
I think right there that shows she's Cluster B because she's accepted that they're going to have experimental vaults.
Yeah, it's certainly that kind of thing where you got a group of people who are making these decisions, and it's the company making these decisions. Now, I always want to point out there is really, in the end, no such thing as company. There is no such thing as society. It all comes down to a group of people making these decisions.
Yep.
But when you get a group of like-minded people together, you can often, especially with a mission in mind, you can very easily lose track of
right and wrong.
What's right? you can get narrow-minded, right? You can. You have that, gee, that seemed like a good idea at the time, because there's nobody there from an outside, with an outside perspective to go, what the fuck are you talking about? And now, let's look at real world, right? So we're talking about the dog.
Yeah, it's easy to get lost in the culture, right?
Right. And let's talk about the dog. So, very famously, they realized after, Hurricane Katrina that when they evacuate, they have to make plans for people's pets. Because people will stay behind and die with their pets. And that was just not a thing that people... And this was in 2005, right? And so they realized that any kind of evacuation plan for an emergency like that, they had to be prepared to deal with that contingency. You would have thought, for those of us who have pets, would go like, yeah. It's not a shock. Now, I don't know if it'd be you or someone else, but like, I know the first person I think of, when you say that would be my father. My father never would have left one of his dogs behind.
I wouldn't leave my cats behind.
I wouldn't leave my cats behind.
Right. But none of this has anything, is not Vault-Tec's problem or the federal government's problem or anybody's problem after a nuclear war. If people want to stay behind for their pets, that, you know, that's fine and dandy, but that's not the point. The point is the Vault-Tec is a place for humans, and it just is. I mean, you know, I mean,
that doesn't mean there wouldn't be people that would try and plan to have dogs in there if it was a different type of business. People in charge.
Right. But this business doesn't have the room
right.
for pets.
No, they choose not to have the room for pets.
Right.
They had a big field underground. Could they not have room for some dogs?
Well, right. But every pet they don't have, especially if you take life expectancy into consideration and food sources into consideration, everyone they take in is one less animal for food and one at less person. So the point is logical, even if it is heartless and or bothers us. So I'm not even sure
I agree with you that it's necessarily logical. There are reasons that you could want to have dogs down there.
I get what you're saying. It would be great, but the point is
no, I'm not saying it would be great. I'm saying there are logical reasons to have dogs with humans in those underground vaults.
Right. But
you're just coming up with your reason for why they wouldn't have dogs.
Right, because for every dog you have, which takes food and eats food, but doesn't provide you with anything except for companionship and happiness. But it, for normal physical living and resources, it and its life expectancy of 8 to 15 years is to these companies and just not worth it, because then you can't bring a cow down, or you can't bring 7 chickens down, or you can't bring another person down. So it's not offensive.
Well, except for the fact offensive. That here's where I'll disagree with you, Phil, is one, they have to be practical about this, and you are being practical, but there is a reason humans do really well, in part because of dogs. We have – not all dogs are – I'm not talking about like the little laptop.
There's plenty of people that are fine without animals too. So it's
– when they come out of the underground, dogs would be useful to have, not knowing right. what is up there. But there are a lot of reasons that you could want to have dogs. Right. I'm not saying there's good reason not to have them, but there could be a reason to have them as well.
They probably have a couple of border collies to work with the sheep, but they're not pets. You know what I'm saying? So that's my point. If they're not going to have just pets, they're going to have animals that are useful for survival. Like real survival, not for mental health survival. I'm talking about.
I think you're fighting this too hard. It doesn't really matter.
Well, you're right. None of this
matters. There are logical reasons for and against it. This company has chosen their way. It doesn't. They're an evil company. We know this to begin with from what we've seen.
But I wouldn't call them evil for not allowing people to have pets.
They're evil because they work in secret and they're doing experimentation on people. I don't call them evil because of the no pets. He wasn't even looking at it as a no pets thing. He was looking at it as who's in charge and making these decisions thing.
Yeah,
it just came from the argument about dogs.
Right. That's fair.
And I don't.
But for some reason we went off on a tangent about. And I'm not saying you, Barrett. I'm talking about more.
We all did. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah.
I just don't think he's thinking about it. And this is a shock, right? She's thinking about the end of the world seriously every day.
Yeah.
Right. And he's thinking about. This is a job. This is a gig. I'm selling a product. I could be selling a Chrysler. And it doesn't really matter. I'm just going to go, at some point off to my ranch and retire. This is never really going to happen. He's not been forced to confront the reality and the real issues. And so you bring up the dog thing. And yeah, if he had thought about it, especially if you, I know this, again, we're dealing with now an alternate 1950s, they definitely would not have been making plans for dogs back then.
No.
And honestly, I don't think they would, except for as failed dogs or things like that.
Yeah, but let's, I didn't want to get back onto that. But that's the thing, I think, is that he was not seeing it that way. He wasn't seeing it as a real problem. He wasn't thinking about the implications of being stuck living in a vault, of the burden of being a survivor, and that really they're not there for in the vault for a getaway vacation. They're there in the vault to preserve humanity.
And she seems to have already moved beyond their relationship into this planning phase. So
well, yeah, and I think
that's what I think is ultimate. Yeah, I think that's ultimately what's going to disillusion him in the end.
Well, the whole thing's bizarre because, yeah, I mean, when she's putting, and we know there's a lot of people that do this, but when she's putting her job above her child and her home life, because you know your legacy is going to be, I guess it doesn't matter what your legacy is, but the point is she has a child, and you would think that's where she
that would be priority, yeah.
Right,
but it's not for everybody.
But that's
right,
that's
right. Just like pets aren't for everybody. Hundreds of people that don't have any pets and they're happy. So, but my point is that she, since she has a kid, she should be focusing on the kid. But she's like already, like you're saying, detaching herself from her own family.
Oh, I disagree. I think she is very much focused on that because part of it is to get her daughter into a good vault. Get her family into a good vault.
Right, because she knows.
But to do that, she's sacrificing who she is.
Or is she? Well, I think she is.
I think she's. I don't think she's sacrificing anything. I always say this: like when a sports figure becomes famous, and they hang around with all these losers, and people say, why are they hanging out with all these hanger-ons? The point is those hanger-ons are the same person as our sports person. It's just that they don't have the skills to become a famous sports person. So maybe the sports person is those people. So maybe she's already was a scumbag and a sociopath even before. And she, you know, and now that she has a kid, she wants to make sure her kid gets into the good thing. Because if she, she had any ethics, she wouldn't be working at this company. What's that, Mike?
I don't think that from this, that you can be talking about being a scumbag, because the only thing you're dealing with here is what you just admitted, which is that there's no room for dogs in the vault. That's what the conversation is about. She doesn't want to give up her job. The job's important to her.
No, no, no. We moved on from the dogs, and now we're talking about her trying to get into good vaults, meaning she knows all the other vaults
are going to
be experimenting on people, because we already know that. So she knows this already, so she's a scumbag.
And she specifically says a management vault, so that we're the ones that save other vaults.
Perhaps Vault 31?
The thing is, I think that you can have people who are detached, who we may look at family and friends as family and friends, and they see things as objects, people as objects. So she's concerned about her objects.
Right.
So her object is her husband and her daughter.
Right.
But she doesn't, she's not connecting him on a deeper level.
Because she's a sociopath. Or
she's a sociopath, right?
Yeah, exactly. Borderline or whatever the hell.
And so she could be saying the right things, but they're not from the same position of someone who's not.
Well, let's be honest. This company's going to hire people they think are good for the position.
Exactly. It doesn't matter if they're actually good people. It's just if they're good for the position.
Well, it might mean that they're bad because they'll be willing to do the things they want them to do.
Well, it's like, again, that Bud Adkins guy, right?
Yep.
When you're having people like those in your company who are like in power positions, that's scary, right?
Well, his wife, she's scary. She's looking at her husband and child as her objects, and they're important to her, not because she necessarily loves them or she has emotions, because she's probably a sociopath, but it's her objects. So, yeah, it's just rotten. And I think I'm beginning to think that he isn't necessarily worried about a nuclear bomb dropping. I think he's worried about the fact that his wife is
involved in something very dark.
And
he probably knows that she's a sociopath. I think it's the first time.
Look, different people can be different at work than they are at home.
That is true.
And so he's been dealing with her as his wife, not as having to deal with her as a, you know, member of the board or whatever, or the research and development team or whatever the hell it is that she does.
Yeah.
Pretty nebulous. I'm just going from what's here. I don't see any reason to think that she's seeing her family as objects. We don't know what her role is involving in things. The decisions made with the company.
No, objects as in she doesn't have normal emotions like you do, Mike.
I don't know where you're getting that from.
She's a sociopath. I'm with Sean on this one.
I think you're jumping to some conclusions based on thin information at the moment.
I'm not sure she's a sociopath. However, there are definitely some questioning things about their interaction in this particular scene.
The one other thing that I was going to say that it's like a side to all of this, because that was a very interesting, just dynamic to see the dynamic change from where it was at the start of the season for him and his wife to where they are at this point. But the thing that was a nice refresher was getting to see Cogsworth, Mr. Seabass, at the party.
Yes.
And Matt Berry's being fantastic.
Right from Fallout 4. Cogsworth is the your robot before the war in Fallout 4. And then he becomes a companion, one of your companions during your adventures.
And just his lines were delivered so fantastically. Like he and Walton Goggins had a great chemistry going in their little scene that they had. And it was just fun to have that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, even him with his comment about, you know, they gave me $186,000 in my own robot. He says, you realize how crazy it is to come home and hear my own voice?
I think it was $186.
Yes, it was $186, I thought it was.
Well, it's $186, so I don't know if he meant like $186K or...
No, he meant $186 because he was so dejected at...
Like the low pay.
The idea that he could have made $1 million. But then they threw in the free robot. And then I love the fact that he points out that he comes home and hears the robot in his own voice.
Yeah.
Would you like to sit down? That was just his delivery for all of that was so great. And then he kind of mentions about the fact of like how the other actors are like, they're going the other direction where like he and Coop he's looking at monetizing this situation where the other actors are like going the other way. And just like, again, kind of like an ominous, observation of like where things are going.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, this is where we also learned that because of his doing the commercials for the vaults, he's losing jobs in Hollywood. He's losing jobs because they all see the vault company, Vaultco, as, you know, as evil, and they don't want anything to do with it. So they're canceling him.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, it's canceling. Yeah, and I don't even know if they know that it's evil and it's more a political thing. I have no idea.
When he was out at the bar with his friend, he pretty much said that.
Yeah, but they'll say
an evil company.
They'll call you evil for voting for your town selectman that they don't like. You know?
They'll call you
evil for being a Christian.
I know that. But my whole point is that not only will they call you evil, but they actually believe he is.
They do, though, even in the real world today.
And that's what I'm trying to say is that he's losing work because they see him as taking the evil side.
Sure.
And he thinks it's all, you know, he thinks it's all nuts. And he goes to one of their meetings and in his mind, he is somebody who fought against communists in Alaska, you know, during a war. And that's, you know, where we hear about the metal suits and the armor, you know, with the design faults and all that. And he wasn't just an actor. He was somebody who fought communism from taking a communist country and probably China from trying to take over Alaska.
And I will say that's something I actually appreciated. When we lose sight of this is that let's pretend that there isn't that big of a difference in these worlds from before 1950. Most of the actors you had in Hollywood would have been veterans.
Yes. Well, I mean, think about today. You think about the guy from It's a Wonderful Life.
Jimmy Stewart.
He was a veteran.
Right.
So was Cary Grant, among quite a few people. A lot of them were veterans. I mean, even Elvis Presley was a veteran.
Ted Williams. Bob Feller.
Right.
Right. Even if a lot of them were in the USO shows, they weren't necessarily on the front lines, but like Yogi Berra was on a boat in D-Day.
Yeah, Ted Williams was. Bob Feller was
a pilot.
Yeah.
So this is I thought that was a nice acknowledgement of reality. And certainly this is reframing the Red Scare a little bit. because you're fighting a hot war as opposed to in a different way. I don't know if Korea has spilled over, if that just resolved itself differently. I'm not sure what exactly was going on with the war in Alaska and how that ended up starting, because I don't remember that the details of that from the game. And I don't know that it matters. But, I mean, we know that there were a lot of communists in Hollywood, right, that they had the blacklist, but this time it's kind of going the other way, right. That they're blacklisting the guy who's working, who's the corporate shill instead. And just a reminder, these are the guys that the Soviets called useful idiots.
right.
So, because they were helping their cause at the expense of their own nations. So, those are debates for a whole other day. We are obviously seemingly getting something sinister with Vault-Tec. I don't think there's any question, if you played the games, that nobody was under the delusion that Vault-Tec was a company that was entirely on the up and up, simply because of the way the vaults were built and structured.
Well, then when Coop is having a chat with his friend in the bar, and his friend is talking about how the idea that, like, what happens when the ranchers have more power than the sheriff or and the government, and the idea that the government is openly has Vault-Tec doing its safety and protection, and the fact that, you know, Vault-Tec isn't a government agency, it's a business that is based on profit for its shareholders or investors. And it's not going to do things that are going to stop it from making the profit. So when he's talking about the idea that there's a possibility of, you know, a peaceful option or like resolution to what's going on, that's not good for business. Right? And it's giving you the hints that of something darker again with Vault-Tec, right?
Right. It gives you the Vault-Tec has to realize they operate on profit. So as a result of operating on profit, if peace comes about, then they're not going to make
vaults are useless.
Right.
And so what do you do to make the vaults not useless? So it was an interesting, you know, and that's the aspect where you get Coop getting more kind of like drawn into like what is actually going on. And then he goes to meet his friend at the place. I can't remember what the name of it was.
Mausoleum.
Forever Hollywood.
Yeah. When he gets and you find out that the person he runs into is Molander.
Moldaver,
my apologies. But you find out that it's Moldaver because there's also a sequence in between where Ghoul in present time has been captured by the president of California and his thugs. And it comes out that after he dispatches with the thugs fairly easily, he sees her picture on the wanted wall.
Yeah.
And he makes a comment that, like, this is, I don't remember her looking like this. And then it opens up to that and then shows that, like, he, and back in his, before the bomb stuff happens, he sees her. So then it makes you wonder, like, again, like, how many more people from that right. specific time are here in the present time. So,
well, did you also notice, and maybe I'm misremembering from an earlier episode, but the president, who obviously knows him from earlier, from earlier years, I don't think he's from the pre-war times because it has been 200 years, and he's not a ghoul. But he does say, he's looking for her.
Yes, so, which is his wife, yeah.
Well, is it his wife that's what or I took is it his it. Daughter?
His daughter.
I think, well, yeah.
It could be either one.
Either one, yeah.
And are they ghouls? Are they in some suspended animation? Were they locked up in a vault? Do we have any idea?
Cryogenics or something?
I would say it's cryo if they are alive, because a cryo is how you survive in Fallout 4.
Right.
Yeah, and it would make sense more, because the only things that live that long are ghouls, unless they're going to come up with some life extension thing that they've come up with, which would be weird, I think.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess, I mean, we're talking Moldaver. We see Moldaver in that Wanda poster, but we also see Moldaver in that weird religious ritual.
Yeah, on a tapestry.
On a tapestry, Vault 4, and they call, I can't remember what they called her, like something about fire. But the thing is that they almost worshipped her, and I'm sitting, it's like, all right, well, that's interesting. But then we also see Moldaver, you know, pre bombs. And so, and that was 200 years, that supposedly was about 200 years ago.
And she still looks the same. Yeah.
And how is she still alive, you know, and in the present where...
Then she was cryo. If you played the games, then she's been cryoed.
Like I said, unless they've come up with something like a life extension thing that's going to be in the show, but not the game.
Right.
But if we're following
the games, which I assume they would, that's the most logical, because that's what happens in the games. But yeah. Anyway, continue, Sean. I mean, Kevin.
I mean, the question is that who cryoed her? When was she cryoed? When did she wake up? There's a lot of questions about her, because obviously she wasn't part of Vault-Tec. So Vault-Tec didn't do it.
Yeah, that's a
fair point. Or was she?
Yeah, exactly. Was she? She seemed to be on an opposing team.
Yeah, she's an,
because she was trying to recruit him.
Yeah.
Right. She was trying to recruit him to oppose Vault-Tec.
Right.
So she wasn't part. So she probably wasn't part of Vault-Tec.
Unless she was on the inside.
Oh, yeah, the inside.
Yeah, like a double agent. She works. She works as an executive or something in the company, and then.
See, that's what I like about this show. It's got a lot of mysteries, but I feel like they're going to get answered.
Yeah. It's not, we've written out a bunch of ideas that we have no idea to actually, you know, make them make sense down the road.
Right.
Right.
But it was interesting then to have that situation, where we get the culty situation in the vault, where... You know, Lucy goes to see what's happening because she thinks, maybe we'll see what's going, you know, she's not sure what's happening, and you think it may be like a meditation thing, and it goes much different than that. And to see her just kind of like her revulsion as she's like seeing this, especially when they're talking about we're wearing the ashes of the people from Shady Hills to bring them back kind of thing. And just a very awkward. And as she's doing that, we have our friend Maximus, who's like totally bought in with his robe and slippers.
He hasn't come out of his robe since he got into it. And
just, yeah, that was great.
and this gets back to these characters being sheltered, being naive, and being a little, for lack of a better term, innocent, right? So his fact that he has no idea what sex actually is, speaks to that. But then, like, you know, he's never had oysters or caviar, or is not even familiar with oysters or caviar. He had no idea. He thought the vaults were full of monsters. And, you know, certainly if you look at our Cyclopean Dr. Spichemin there, that...
He's not a monster. He's just...
He's a cyclops.
Mutated. He's mutated.
And some people would consider that to be a monster. Yeah. That's actually kind of where the term derives from. But
right, but I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but he's saying that there's good things in the vaults, which he had just never assumed. And I guess most people in that world probably just assumed the vaults were something you should have probably steer clear of.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable for him because he's just seen this as a good thing. They have like you
food
said,
on tap.
There's great food. They got showers,
clean water to drink.
They got yep. blankets and slippers and robes and a change.
The music
of
you can listen to.
Yeah. So it's a
TV.
Yeah, TV.
So, and the idea that his cock could explode.
So he's got an idea that this is a good thing. You know, now are the people evil that are there or monsters or not? I mean, obviously they have one eye. You know, the Cyclops, the head of the Vault Tech head or the Vault leader or whatever you want to call him. But he's not. He doesn't
caretaker.
Seem evil. What is it?
Caretaker.
Yeah, it's another term for it. I forget what they call him.
I thought he was called the caretaker.
Yeah, there's another term for it, though, that I'm more familiar with. I just can't think of it. But it doesn't matter. It's all semantics. But
no,
yeah.
I don't think his title is caretaker.
Yeah, I know. But what do they call the leader of the vaults?
Caretaker.
In the game.
Caretaker.
Okay, I don't know about the game, but in the show, it's a caretaker.
They call them overseer. Yeah, the overseer. That's what they call him. So whatever, it doesn't matter. It's semantics. But they call him overseer in the game and whatnot. But either way, this guy seems pretty decent. He just says don't go up to that floor. And then of course they have the weirdos from that do that weird religious cult thing for someone that massacred people in 33. So, but otherwise, they haven't done anything bad to Maximus, right? So,
she's feeling uncomfortable through a lot of what they're doing and acting. But I think the worst thing they could have done was say, "Don't go here." Of course, somebody's going to go and check it out, especially if they're suspicious of you.
Well, I mean, she probably hasn't even heard of level 12 until they mentioned it.
Right. So if they had not mentioned it, she would have never gone looking.
Well, right. It's like when he's in such a offhand manner, and you know, of course, don't go in level 12.
But he was more concerned about the foosball table, and if you can't sign up and there's no pencil, come to get the pencils. He had lots of pencils. And then what was it about going to the washroom correctly?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, this is how you flush the toilet, right? I mean, the thing is, all the guy, like the overseer, and maybe that is what they were calling him in the show.
Yeah,
that's
Hank was called, her father was called the overseer. Well, but anyway,
all he could have said was, there's something up, like, people. Okay. He could have said something like, there was a leak or something contagious up there. Nobody goes up there. That's why it's off limits.
Well, why do they think it's off limits? That's what I want to know.
Well, no, I mean, the overseer knew why it was off limits.
Is it because he thinks what they're doing is wrong? Is it because he doesn't want them interfering with it? Because he doesn't think they'll understand? Is this supposed to be a big secret?
Yeah, they're new. I don't think they're supposed to go there.
They're new. They're not supposed to go there. But like, is this something they're keeping secret from the rest of the vault? Is this something, or is this like everyone kind of knows what's going on down there, but you're not supposed to go down and see it, or you're not supposed to go down and interfere with it? That's where I'm a little less sure about what's going on. And by the way, point out this was the vault we saw at the commercial at the beginning.
Right. Yeah, the doctor
this
family.
This is the vault of scientists.
Yes. And I enjoyed the fact of, like, when Lucy is getting her kind of talk with him in his office, and he keeps calling her Goosey.
Yeah.
and then he's talking about, like, about the surfacers, and about how, like, they're not like us. And she's like, what do you mean? Because she thought he was from the surface because of his mutation. Right. And just, like, the way his, like, and again, Chris Parnell was so hilarious in his delivery of just being like super weird and awkward, and it was just done so great. And then,
like, there was nothing different about him.
Yeah, it's nothing. But then when it leads to the fact of, like, okay, now she's, you know, has the culty situation and is like, knows something is wrong. She goes back to Maximus to try and convince him to leave. And now he's kind of like, doesn't want to leave because this is a pretty good deal. So then she's like, I'm going to find the truth and come back to you. And so then we get the situation where she goes to, level 12 and you see the cryo chambers and you see that test chamber. And she watches the video of the woman giving birth to the fish creatures that then promptly eat her.
Eat her? Yes.
Like, oh my gosh, that was just, ugh. And then you see the gulper that's floating dead in the water, or maybe not dead in the water, but, and so you're starting to get like, there's much more going on. And then when you see the video, like, that's not good experimenting, right? And then you have the sequence where, you know, she gets caught in there. And
wait, Sean, wait. Who are you to judge?
It wouldn't happen in my home. I would do that to people. But I love the line that the woman that greets him or whatever and then is like heading the security who comes and says like, you know, you may not do that in your home, but this is our home and this is our way kind of thing. Which is just like.
She's right.
Yeah. Technically, but it's also like disturbing, right? That just what people will justify or whatever, right?
Well, it's what Mike said you last week. Mike, you said it's normal to them.
Yeah.
So who says Lucy's correct? Because it's not like there's any.
To a tribe of cannibals, eating people is not wrong necessarily.
Well, you know, I mean, there's also the argument that some cultures are better than others, and that's probably fair too. But in something like this, in this vault, what we see, at least not in that level 12 or whatever the hell level it was, everything seems fairly normal if eccentric and flaky.
Right. It's under the surface bad.
Right. So it's, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I don't know.
Well, again, this is what I'm saying. Do they realize what they're doing is bad? Or is it what they're just doing top secret, right? Are they just, why is it they don't want anyone going down there? And there's all sorts of reasons why they can make that argument. Is it that they're trying to hide it? Is it this that they don't want people to know what they're doing? Or are people kind of aware of what they're doing, but they're not allowed to see the results? Or they just don't want them coming down there and fucking around with the experiments? So, right. Because the way they drop that level 12 thing so casually, it's like, well, of course you're not going to go down to level 12.
Right. Well, there's no doubt that the scientists that did the original experiments were evil, or sociopath, whatever you want to call them, because the people that were victims were most likely not willing to be victims.
It's been 200 years. We don't know. Like what the original scientists were doing and, you know, where these things may have gone off the rails.
I was assuming by the fish experiment thing that was a more recent situation, not 200 years ago.
And right? Was she giving birth to gulpers? What was she giving birth to?
Yes, and then they...
That then proceeded to eat her, yeah.
To eat her.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking... Well, it depends on what we see in the next episode, I guess, right?
So, yeah.
I mean, that will determine whether or not we have whether or not the Gulpa thing was new or not. Because, you know, if the technology is what it is, you know, we have video now. As long as EMP doesn't wipe it out, that will look mint in 300 years from now because everything's video. It's not like
– But it looks like the tank that the woman had been in was – fairly recent, and you would think you wouldn't keep a video 200 years ago for...
Disk-based costs nothing and takes up no space at all. I mean, now you can have a disk that...
Well, you know, now, but they're not now.
They're not now. And they stopped in the 50s.
Again, their technology is better than different. Our technologies.
Not necessarily better, it's different.
They don't have LCD screens.
Yeah.
Well, I understand. Yeah, you're right. We don't know what their technology is, but I'm not going to say that is a new video or not a new video, because
yeah, I don't think we can say that either. But
and also the tank could be the same tank that was there 200 years ago, because the vaults don't change really. I mean,
not really.
Yeah,
well, they don't have any there, manufacturing that we know of.
That's right.
Was in the tank?
Yeah, that's true. But again, I don't know. Do we know what's in the tank?
No, we don't. That's why I'm saying it's presumptuous to just assume that the original scientists were evil.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah, that's a fair point. Well, if the victims were not willing, then they were evil.
Right, but we don't know any of that.
I don't think that woman was willing to be eaten.
Well, did they know she was going to be eaten?
They still could have gotten her out.
But why was she in the tank? What was she in the tank in the first place?
Well, that's a thing. They've done childbirth for years. They've done women have had childbirth in water, swimming pools.
Yeah, okay.
In water.
Yeah. We don't know if she was a prisoner. That's true.
So there may have been perfectly innocent reasons for doing it. Maybe they were trying to create some sort of aquatic people that could survive in the oceans and eat fish. We have no, and they had accidentally ended up creating gulpers with giant mouths lined with human fingers and
keep going, Gobbles.
Yeah. And then there's always the possibility that they were just like, fuck around and find out, right? Let's just see what happens if we do this.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it wasn't a pleasant experience for the lady involved.
Right.
That's fair.
No, not certainly not at the end.
Definitely right. Not at the end.
Yeah, and we don't know why she was giving birth to gulpers. I mean, I have no idea why she was giving birth to gulpers.
And did they create the gulpers, did they capture a gulper and experiment with it?
Right. That sounds even worse.
Right. Or was she a survivor from that post-nuclear war, and they brought her up, and they were trying to help her, and then gulpers came and ate her.
She birthed gulpers and they came and ate her. They're trying to help her.
Yeah,
maybe. Maybe it's an alien.
Possible.
We don't know. Yeah. So who knows what that video means? I mean, it doesn't look good, and it's most certainly a terrible thing, but we don't know what happened, why it happened.
I have to say, this show is the second show this week I've seen that had a huge number of cast member extras getting naked. The Three Body Problem had a similar scene where everybody's naked.
I'm still very disappointed that Lucy, but that's besides the point.
She almost did. She almost lowered her shirt. She thought about it for a brief moment.
She did. She did. Yeah. Sure did.
But then she checked her contract. It wasn't in it. So
it wasn't in that. Exactly.
Right. You can see her nude in other things, so it doesn't matter. But yeah, it wasn't in this contract.
She already got called by got a phone call from Amelia Clark. She said, you're doing a show with Benioff and Weiss. Don't agree to the nudity clause.
Nope, this isn't Benioff and Weiss show.
Is it? Oh no! That's the
three body problem.
That's the three body problem, right? Yeah.
The same point remains though. Sure. Don't show your body.
Now let's see what else. So So where do we want to go? What else do we need to talk about?
Interesting. This episode had no Norm.
Hold on. The best line was, "Do you want to have sex?"
Yes.
What? That was awesome. That's hilarious. Anyway, what were you saying about Norm? Oh yeah. Well, there was no Norm. But,
no Norm.
Yeah, so like we've had. There hasn't been many Norms really, right? Until last week, he was huge, but.
But I'm just saying, each of these episodes has focused on part of the characters, right? And in a good way. Like last week, we didn't have any of the ghoul, right? And this week, it's more. We have more of the ghoul, and we have Lucy Maximus, but then no Norm. So it's just the way that they're pacing the different character stories is interesting.
Yeah, and it's not like. You know, sometimes I get lost in these, oh, okay, we gotta have an episode for this character. But this doesn't feel that way. It feels more natural than.
Yeah, it's not like The Walking Dead where you would have the main character for one episode and then wait half the season before you get to follow up with them.
Exactly.
Like, none of that, thankfully. But But I just thought it was just, again, just the way that they were unveiling the story to us and the multiple storylines to us is a very good way.
It's pleasing.
Yes.
Indeed, indeed.
And I think, like, the extras that they've had, like getting Matt Berry and Chris Burnell, and then the guy who was Sorrell or whatever his name is, the president, who's, like, a good character actor, right? Like, you see his face and you know him. And just giving out, like, he has, like a vibe he gives off or whatever. And I just, like, their casting choices are fantastic.
Yeah, I can just...
Go ahead.
It's always risky to me when you're casting somebody from SNL because these are guys who are good actors and they are used to doing a bunch of characters, but they often aren't actors who, like, disappear in their character. So, like, everybody who knows SNL knows that that was Chris Parnell, right? They just picked him up immediately.
Who's Chris Parnell? I don't know SNL. So is he the guy that does the news?
He's the doctor.
No.
No, but does he do the news on SNL?
No.
No.
Okay. He was just a member of the cast who, like, did multiple different characters.
Yeah. About 20 years ago, during, Tina Fey and...
The Narnia stuff.
Amy Poehler and a bunch of the Narnia. Other cast.
But this was a place where he worked well.
Yeah.
So what were you going to say, Barrett?
I'm trying to remember now. My 50-year-old, some 50-plus brain, you know, just kind of farted.
Yeah, because I apologize, because I didn't even know who this guy was, so I was confused.
That's all right.
Yeah.
I know what I was going to say. I just remembered. Okay. So I really liked how they even gave us background on the guy who did the robot, you know, the voice. I thought that was cool. It's just little things like that that really add to the story. Don't take a lot of time, but are very good.
Yes. And again, it doesn't feel, none of it feels like filler.
Right.
And it's, again, very concise, deliberate storytelling done well.
Right, right.
Because to this point in time, out of the 6 episodes we've watched, there isn't anything that I can sit here and start pulling apart the storyline or the writing or any of that stuff.
Right.
Which is a refreshing change from some of the stuff we've dealt with. It's been the opposite of that.
Yeah, a lot of garbage.
Right. The only thing you could pull apart, you know, is just the world, right? And that's part of the conceit of it, right? The idea that there was a nuclear war in the 50s and then yet somehow they had these magically scientific advanced vaults with power armor but that's all part of buying into this universe.
Right. If you can't buy into that, you shouldn't be watching it.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't be watching it.
Right. Right. Given the universe that we have, right, and the rules of this universe, and I'm perfectly fine with the rules of this universe, I think they're doing a pretty decent job.
And the fact is they're not giving a middle finger to the people who are the actual gaming fans. Like, at no point in this watching the 6 episodes, Phil, have you, as a game person, have you felt like you're being short-shifted or anything like that from their storytelling?
Well, see, I don't think – I know what you're getting at. I don't think that Halo was giving the middle finger to the gaming fans, because I don't think Halo gave a shit enough about the gaming fans to give them the middle finger.
They didn't. If they did, they would have not done this whole separate thing.
So. But,
What it is you don't have shitty showrunners. And so, you know, this is a Jonathan Nolan show. So it's, they don't, you know, they've had their mistakes, you know, like season.
Yeah, whatever, like everybody does.
Westworld, right. But they're great. And him and his wife. And so, this is not offensive at all. This isn't like The Stand, which was the total BS. You know, they changed everything. And then this isn't like Lovecraft Country, which was just crap. And then it wasn't Last of Us, which is focused on characters that I don't give a rat's ass about, never mind the fact there's no zombies in it. And it's not like Halo, which completely ruined the world that the game's in. Fallout is fairly, I would say, 90%.
I thought they did a great job with one.
I would say this is 97% spot on, and that's the reason why people who like the games aren't insulted and actually like the show because it's good, and those people who haven't played the games like the show because it's good. So it's a win-win situation, I think.
Well, again, you can make changes to a show or a series and improve
like
it.
It is possible, yes.
And find ways that make it actually better, but you have to know, like, you can't change the fundamentals of it. You can change the details of it. You can tweak things and improve upon it.
Like creating a whole new message out of it, you know, if there was a message in a story, that's not usually cool either.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this... First of all, if you're going to make changes, it can't be drastic changes like they did with Halo, and they did, or The Stand, or you know, and they did, and it was just terrible. So to answer your question, no, Sean, this show hasn't insulted my enjoyment of the game, and it's actually one of the best adaptions ever. I feel so. Yeah, it's huge. It was really good. Did that answer your question, Sean?
Yep. No, I'm glad. I'm like this, and this is why it feels rewarding to be able to look forward to each episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Mike, you played three, as you mentioned. I don't think this has disappointed you like Halo has. I'm assuming you're spot on with what I said.
Yeah, I didn't have to wait 2 years to get to Fallout.
Yeah. Right.
You know, if you had... Well, like, I'll throw out... So there's another video game adaptation coming out in movies soon called Borderlands. I have never played...
Eli Roth is directed it. But anyway, continue.
Right, I've never played a Borderlands game, ever.
I haven't either. But it's supposed to be really good.
They're fun.
But from what I could see... I saw it. If you had not told me that was a Borderlands movie, I would have looked and went, oh, that's a Borderlands movie. I would have picked that up right away.
Right.
You know, I watched this, and this screams Fallout. From the art design, from the music, the writing, the you know, the characters, the humor, it is all very much in keeping with that universe that they've made. And let's be clear, this is a very specific universe that they've made. There's a lot of video games where they have a very, you know, generic world, you know, your generic fantasy world or what have you. This is a very particular world with a very particular sense of style, and they've captured it beautifully.
Yep.
And then executed the rest of it, the storytelling part of it. Because again, it's a sandbox game. There's a story to it, but you could wander around Fallout 3, you know, for you know, dozens and dozens of hours without ever making much of a dent in the main story.
Right.
So it's not like there's a driving narrative that they have to absolutely do, right? That the way there might be in other properties, you know, or unlike say, I don't know, Halo, which has a very specific story that they tended to ignore.
Big time.
No.
Yep. Let's see. Anything else do we want to bring up that we're missing that was on people's list that we haven't talked about yet?
Just another great episode for on my end is what I would say.
Yeah, and it helps that we've got, I mean, I don't think there was a lot with the ghoul, right? It's the ghoul's captured. By the way, let's be clear. He was captured for doing something he didn't do.
Right. He definitely was. Yes. And he never said that either, which is awesome. He just, took it. Whatever.
Yeah.
Well, he was confident he was going to get out no matter what happens.
Right. And so he was arrested for a thing he didn't do. He got out of it. I don't think it shed any real light on what was going on there. It did get him his finger back. Except that we do find out that he's looking for her, whoever her happens to be. And he finds out about Moldaver. He gets a couple of pieces of the puzzle. And I think the bigger issue is what he learns in the past.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And we wonder, is this part of what has made him into the man he is now? Right? Is there something that's going to happen between him and his wife that is actually what causes him to become the ghoul? And is it not something that happened, meaning in his personality, right? Where he becomes this hardened and bitter kind of guy. Is he going to blame his, we don't know if the daughter dies or is still alive. And if, does he blame the wife for the daughter's death? If the daughter's dead, or separating him from his daughter, right? Did the wife steal him, the daughter from him and leave him behind and not let him come into the vault? There's all sorts of questions that I have, about this at this point.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see that in the next episode, I guess.
It's got to be in the next two episodes, because there isn't a third.
That is true. Let's see. Anything else anybody have they want to bring up?
No. I think it's just the idea, though, about the wanting profit hinted at they needed a war to make profit. That one, I mean, I know we covered it, but that scared me.
Yeah. I would concur. Anything else? Anybody else want to bring up? Anyone?
Nope. I think we're good.
All right. Sounds good. So, that's our review on episode 6 called The Trap. And next week will be The Radio that we will be talking about, which is episode 7. But before we do that, let's give our wrap up here, final review and stuff. Before we do, Barrett, what's that other podcast that me and you do, but we also have a group of other co-hosts that join us, and we're about to do a big month in June?
Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews. We have a big month coming in June. It's LGBTQ month, and we watch lesbian art house movies, but our first one, it sounds like, is going to be a comedy, actually, so that'll be a nice change of pace. So every week in June, look for something from us in that vein. And lots more coming down the line.
Yep. And Mike, what's the main podcast that we do? Me, you,
Barrett. The main podcast of the Dark Discussions News Network is the Dark Discussion Podcast, brought to you weekly since the year 2011, your source for horror news, horror film, fiction, and all that is fantastic. We will be reviewing a Shudder release. A recent Shudder release on our upcoming episode. We've recently done a couple of other films. What was the? I'm annoyed.
We did Talk to Me.
Baghead and Talk to Me are our two most recent episodes. We actually have a couple of theatrical releases coming out. I don't know if we're covering them or not, because there's a lot coming out in the near future. I don't know if we're going to cover them while they're in the theaters, or maybe when they hit home video, or maybe we won't cover them at all. Who knows? But we will see. Right now the next one online is a creepy crawly film that is on Shudder.
Indeed. Yep. And Sean, what's that podcast that we just finished up on Paramount Plus?
That was Cortana's Communiques, a Halo podcast that followed the first two seasons of Halo. And, yeah, the podcast was more enjoyable than the actual series.
Yep, and assuming this season three comes out, we'll probably do that, but we're not sure yet. We'll figure it out because they may not even have a season three. And Kevin, what was that podcast that we just wrapped up about a television series on Netflix?
We did season one of the show One Piece, which is a live action show based on the animate Japanese anime of the same name. And I am looking forward, like I said before, to season two, because the anime is pretty fun, but I really enjoy how they did the live action.
Indeed. All right. We do have a few other podcasts too, but you can always check
out. And our House of the Dragons coming up soon too, season two.
Yeah. When is that?
June 16th is when the first episode drops for House of the Dragon.
Yeah, so Halloween Boutique Psychotron Reviews having a big run in June, and then House of the Dragon will be back, where I think all of us will be a part of, except for Kevin. And then, of course,
what show was that?
House of the Dragon.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And then we have the Dark Discussion stuff to come in as well every week. All right, so let's get into our final review on The Trap. So let's start with you, Mike.
Yeah, I like this a lot. This was a fun episode. It is like the last episode. It is not an episode that had a lot of action in it, but it had a lot of development, a lot of light shown in dark corners, and also a lot of humor. This is a very, very fun episode. So, yeah, definitely high recommend again.
All right. Yeah, for me, this episode was really good. It had some creepy moments, it had grindhouse moments, it had funny moments, it had heartwarming moments, and it also had a pretty awesome flashback scenes. So it has Cosworth, so the guy that created Cosworth, and all the whole thing, everything's great. So big thumbs up for this one. I recommend. The show is still holding strong by episode 6. Let's go for you, Sean.
Yeah, another great episode. So damn well done on so many levels. And again, looking forward to discussing our next episode next week.
All right. And Kevin.
Great episode. Look forward to doing the next one.
All right, and Barrett.
Yeah, another great episode. I think this season's going to finish out strong. I'm not worried anymore at all. Usually I worry for a while about every new show. This one is great. Everyone should be watching it. Looking forward to the next one.
Indeed. I think everybody went, right?
Yeah.
Did I miss anybody? All right, so once again, The Trap. Episode 6. Again, we're recording this May 21st, 2024. The next episode, we're going to record on May 28th, 2024. And should wrap up the podcast on June 4th, 2024. We got a bunch of stuff going on. That means maybe we'll even record one of the Halloween boutiques next week, Barrett. And Sean, if you guys want to, because we can just release it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Might make it easier, especially if House of the Dragon's coming out in June.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll coordinate on that through instant message, text and stuff later.
Can I throw two things, Phil, before we wrap up?
Yeah, sure.
Just that X-Men 97 first season finished last week and was absolutely fantastic. And I can't wait to see what they do with seasons 2 and 3 to come. And I'm also excited this upcoming Friday because I get to go see the new Mad Max movie.
Me too.
All right. Sounds good. All right. So, because Mad Max will probably be a Dark Discussions episode. Like Mike said, we're not sure if we're going to be able to get to it as a theater. or as a VOD, but we'll probably get to it for sure. There's a bunch of them, as Mike mentioned. There's just a lot of stuff just falling at the same time.
Right. Well, we've got that. We've got the next Quiet Place. We have the new Strangers, Chapter 1, and then there's a Chapter 2 coming later this year, and who knows when Chapter 3 is coming, but they're already filmed. Yeah. We
still want to do King Kong versus Godzilla for Halloween Boutique. I know you do, Mike.
For Halloween Boutique and King of Kaiju. I know you're trying to do the Emily Blunt film, which has not done well in the box office and is apparently going to be hitting streaming next week.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. So we'll probably do that when it goes down to cheap. That's going to be a Halloween Boutique Cyclotron review. So when we either make it to our streaming service or go to a normal rental price rather than the $20 rental price, we'll do an episode on that. It's a shame that it didn't do well at the box office because it got fairly good reviews by both audiences.
It's a fun movie. Yeah, it's unfortunate. Yeah,
it's just that for some reason.
Yeah, I might catch it tomorrow night if I have the time. By the way, I just went to rewatch Godzilla vs. Kong. That's been on streaming for about a week or two, and it's still in theaters. So just because it's on home video doesn't necessarily mean that it's out of the theaters.
And Dune 2 is streaming now as well, FYI.
Oh, for rental?
No, on Max.
Oh, Max already, yeah.
Yeah, yep.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, so there's a lot of good stuff out there. We're going to try to get to most of it. It's just going to take a while because, as Mike said, there's just so many stuff and how many movies can we make it to the theaters? For me, anyway, because I have softball with my girls almost every night, it seems. So
even for me, it's hard because, you know, we do podcasts at least two nights a week. This week, it's three. It's hard to find the time with work to see a movie. So,
yeah, right. Yeah. And then my weekends are, I'm stuck a lot doing, like, I had to see a film. When I did see it, it had to be a film with the kids, you know, the family film. We got other stuff coming. We're going to be doing the Rise of the whatever the Planet of the Apes film's called, Return or Rise or whatever.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Yeah,
there you go. So we're going to be doing that. So we got a lot of good stuff coming up. That's pretty much it. But definitely look out for the latest episode of this podcast, which just came out today, called The Past. And this one's coming out 2 days later. The Trap. The Trap coming 2 days later. All right. So that's pretty much it. We will wrap it up. So, Kevin, why don't you lead us out?
Thank you very much, everybody, for listening to us talk about the next episode in Fallout. I hope you join us again for our next episode for what promises to be another good episode. This has been a very good show so far, and I hope you can join us again. Thank you, and have a good week.
I know that I've lived a relatively comfortable life.
You need to go home. Vault dwellers are an endangered species. I do not think you would be willing to do what it takes to survive up here. If you insist on staying, then you will have to adapt.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to see tomorrow unless I see you.
Tomorrow, so they say, will be a lovely day. A bright new sun will suddenly break through. But I don't want to see tomorrow unless I see it with you.
and grabbed a moldy one.